I don't know. It was a disease that I caught, and I'm glad I did. I classified nerds if they really get it, what choral music can do. There's something deep and profound that can come through choral music like no other idiom.
Dale Warland takes great pride in being a choral nerd. He has been a celebrated conductor and composer of choral music for 6 decades. 3 of those decades he spent with the ensemble that he founded, the Dale Warland Singers. They disbanded in 2004. Now, though, there's a series of live recordings that are coming out periodically, and the latest one is a celebration of Christmas music. It's called ODA, and it features the works of Benjamin Britten and Daniel Pinkham. That's what you're going to hear about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with Dale Warland, who spent 30 years with an ensemble known as the Dale Warland Singers, and they have just resurfaced with a new recording from the archives. And we're going to talk about this new recording, ODA. Welcome, Dale.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So this is the second recording in a series of live recordings. Would you like to explain what that means?
Well, the whole idea was to revisit past performances of the Dale Warland Singers and find literature either that had never been recorded before, or there were very few recordings, or at least there weren't many good recordings, and especially repertoire that is not so well known. So it's an effort to keep good choral music alive.
So how have you gone through this process? I mean, the ensemble disbanded in 2004, so you must be doing a lot of listening.
Yes. We have no staff, no office, so I'm it. The first step was to listen to everything that had been recorded, see what's good and keepable, and then decide what should be heard again. But then the last step is a little bit more tricky, where we need to program. You just don't throw everything together and put on a CD. Well, you can, but it's much better if you program a CD, much as you program a concert.
Why is it important to do this series? What is the legacy of the Dale Warland Singers?
Well, it's primarily the repertoire, especially for those that are planning, other conductors looking for repertoire. It's amazing how quickly we forget the past. I mean, you go to a concert now of choral music, and very little comes from the 20th century, and that's where I did most of my work. There's a tendency to want to do the newest and the latest and forget the Renaissance and other periods that are so full of wonderful choral music.
So how did you program this new recording, which is called ODA?
Well, this one was a little simpler because it's Christmas, so all the music of Daniel Pinkham is Christmas music, and of course the Benjamin Britten classic, A Ceremony of Carols, is for the Christmas season. So that was quite easy in programming. But in the case of Pinkham, we had sung quite a bit of his music, but primarily, except for the Christmas cantata, which is so famous, most of his music written for Christmas, and he wrote a lot for Christmas, just sort of forgotten. At least it seems that way from my perspective.
Dale, why are these two composers, Benjamin Britten and Daniel Pinkham, so significant?
Well, it's the quality of their writing, first of all. Of course, Britten, I looked at Britten as probably the greatest composer of the 20th century, especially the quality and the quantity of his choral music. And the greatest example is the War Requiem, which was written in 1961-62. But the early works, his earliest works are quite outstanding, as we find with The Ceremony of Carols, which was written when he was just 19 years old, so he was a very young chap. And the risk of doing The Ceremony of Carols is because it is such a classic and everybody knows the work. But in my case, we just happened to hit a performance that everything seemed to click. There was a magic, and we look for that word, and it seldom happens, but it happened that one night. And if you know the work, you know that it was first written for SSA, three-part treble voices and harp. Subsequently, because it was so well known, he gave approval to put it for SATB, a mixed choir. And I much prefer that. It gives the piece the guts that I find the treble voices can't always deliver. So my favorite version is the mixed chorus with harp.
And this is from a performance of 2000, so almost 20 years ago. And can you actually remember that performance?
Yes, I can. I do tend to remember the concerts that had that magic touch, and this was one. And it was reinforced by a call I received from a conductor in Michigan. He heard the live radio broadcast, and he said, "You must put this out. This is 20 years ago." And he's hounded me ever since and has sent money to help make sure that it happens. So that has reinforced the fact that it stuck with my memory.
So what sticks in your mind as you were in front of this ensemble on that date back in 2000? What do you remember about this performance?
The tempo seemed right. The soloist did brilliantly. Things were in tune. It had not only the technical features you want to be as perfected as possible, but it had the emotional content, which this is what ends up sticking with you. There's that magic that comes from the emotional impact. But all the stars were aligned. It's just one of those wonderful moments when everything comes together.
Do you have a favorite section of the Ceremony of Carols that you'd like to make sure that we really listen closely to?
That's a hard question, but I suppose, I think you mentioned that you like the Balulalo. Probably my favorite too. Second would be the Freezing Winter, I believe it's called. One thing about this work, as a conductor, you can't wait until you start the next movement and the next movement. There are elements in each one that you enjoy hearing and conducting. So each one kind of has a special invitation to it when you turn the page and you see that next title and you start the choir.
So both Benjamin Britten and Daniel Pinkham were influenced by Aaron Copland. Britten influenced by him. Pinkham actually studied with Copland. I'm curious where in the pieces on this recording we might actually hear Copland's influence.
Like Copland's music, you find in both Pinkham and Britten a clarity and a cleanliness about the construction, technically. Every note seems to have a place and a purpose. There's no padding, no filler. There's nothing that's extraneous.
Mm. Then you're getting to that quality that you're talking about, it sounds like.
Yes, hopefully. There's one thing about technical quality, but then there's that spiritual element that also comes through. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about something that goes beyond or certainly enhances the technical skills that these composers had.
And I would imagine the text certainly plays into that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because text was very important to these three composers. And Britten had a remarkable skill of finding great texts that were interesting and just good writing. And that was true of Pinkham as well. Copland wrote very little choral music. So in a way, his music was incidental. Choral music was not incidental for Britten or Pinkham. They were choral nerds in a sense. They love choral music.
So that term choral nerd, do you apply that to yourself?
Yes.
So how did you become a choral nerd? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
I don't know. It was a disease that I caught, and I'm glad I did. It's somebody who really, I classify nerds if they really get it, what choral music can do. Choral music done well, performed well, can move you like nothing else. there's something deep and profound that can come through choral music like no other idiom.
Do you think that has something to do with the fact that the instrument is the human body?
Oh, it has a lot to do with that. Yeah, it has a lot to do with that. You can sing a single chord or a single note and be moved to tears, and you wonder how that happens.
Let's talk a little bit more about Daniel Pinkham.
We first met at Tanglewood when I was a student there in 1958. He had written the Christmas Cantata in 57. It was commissioned and performed by Lorna Cook DeVern, who was a famous conductor on the East Coast, and she was on the faculty. She was one of the teachers I had at Tanglewood, and we sang the Christmas Cantata in manuscript. It had just been performed the December before, and little did I know that it would catch on. It would just had that special element that appealed, and there are several good reasons, I think, for it. It had some very practical things about it. Conductors are looking for what we call semi-extended works, something beyond a three-minute carol. And this was a three-movement work. It just caught on, and when it was published, I remember one thing that Daniel Pinkham told me. He said that his royalties paid for his garage, so that was pretty good for the first year.
Do you want to talk about the different movements within the cantata? Because one of the things that struck me was it goes through different moods, very specific moods in each of the movements.
Well, the middle one, Omanum Mysterium, it's just haunting the way he takes that text. The interplay with the voices and the brass is just phenomenal. Beautiful contrast to the first and the third movements. The first and the third a little bit more joyous and upbeat, and it is a glorious ending, of course.
Company at the Creche. Now, how delightful. I had never thought about a porcupine being there or a spider, you know, all these things that are just there, and a caterpillar. These were delightful little kind of a different perspective to think about the birth.
Your word delightful is right on. I call it charming. You know, it's charming in its makeup and it's charming in what you hear. But Norma Farber, who was the poet, chose these interesting animals, and Daniel Pinkham takes those creatures and sort of tries to emulate the character of the behavior, the response that these animals would have coming to the creche, coming to the cradle. Stork. Caterpillar. Rooster. Spider. Porcupine. The thing about it, you can just sense that he just enjoyed, I think, creating what kind of a happening it would be if the porcupine came to the cradle. So there's a freshness and an appeal about every single movement of this.
The Kings and the Shepherds. Now, there are three pieces in this set by Pinkham. What's his intention? Do you know why it's in unison?
The setting that he made of Evergreen, I think, is especially unique, and I use the word haunting again in this case. It's not easy to write a melody that stands alone. I mean, it sounds simple, but he created a melody here that I find quite haunting. It goes on quite long, but you never tire of it. And then he's got an underlying pattern in the instrumentation that repeats itself over and over again. But somehow the two really create a work that I find really very moving and simply beautiful.
What was happening in the life of the Dale Warland singers at the time that the Daniel Pinkham pieces were being performed and recorded?
The Dale Warland singers were a volunteer choir up until about this time, because when I started the Dale Warland Singers, nobody paid singers. And I felt strongly that singers that had degrees in music had as much background and teaching and experience as a fiddle player in the Minnesota Orchestra or any other professional orchestra, but still were expected to do their thing without any pay. So at this point, about the time that we were doing the Pinkham, we were still a volunteer choir. So what you're hearing is a volunteer choir. But I learned along the way that before you can ask for pay, you've got to prove that you earn it. In other words, that our singing level had to come to what you would consider professional level. So we had to achieve that first. Then people finally realized that, yes, these people are a little bit above most volunteer choirs. So at the time we were doing this Pinkham, we were just in that transition where these were still volunteers. But at this point in time, we were at that level that I thought we could say we're professional level, but these singers deserve some compensation for their work.
Is there a plan for what the next live recording might be?
It'll be more literature that's unknown or lesser known than what we've done so far. But there will be another one next season. The first one called Seasons. We're very excited about it because it includes Dominic Argento's last official work that he composed, and he composed it for me. And then Persichetti's music, so much of it's again lost, but two Italian-Americans who became good friends and wrote such great choral music. We're happy that this one now is out, Christmas music by Daniel Pinkham and Benjamin Britten.
The magic of the Dale Warland Singers, living on through a series of new recordings. The latest is called ODA. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for this show is to tell somebody about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.